This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On April 26, 2006, there was a Charlottesville City Council candidate forum sponsored by Earth Week Charlottesville and Democracy for America. The forum was moderated by Bob McAdams of Democracy for America and held in City Council chambers. Candidates Dave Norris and Julian Taliaferro participated in the candidate forum. Candidate Rob Schilling was unable to attend. This recording by Charlottesville Tomorrow begins with introductory remarks by Bob McAdams.
Okay, our format will be pretty simple and informal. What we will do is I have a series of prepared questions here that came from the members of the various sponsoring groups. We are also circulating index cards so that anyone in the audience can fill them out and ask a question. When we've exhausted both of those sets of questions, anyone will be free to come to the microphone up here and ask a question directly of one or both of the candidates. The questions that I have here are on five different topics. We'll alternate who has the first response, and you'll have 2 minutes for that initial response, and then the other will have 1 minute to follow up with other comments. So the first topic is transit. And the first question, where do you stand on Council's recent decision to greenlight VDOT's acquisition of property in preparation for the building of the McIntyre Extension Meadow Creek Parkway? Julian, do you want to approach that?
Yes, I'll go ahead. I support that as long as the, well, there's a couple things there. First is the, I think it was the letter that Council, where they noted their 12 critical considerations. It was like the, I think the two-lane design, speed limit, Vietnam Memorial, I forget what they all were. Along with having a intersection design that will take care of the traffic there. And I guess another issue with that that I just found out several weeks ago is that the traffic studies that they're using, I think, are 6 years old. So they have to do another traffic demand study. I think I'm correct in that. I'm not really sure, but I think I am. So I guess we'll have to once again find out if those designs are going to really handle whatever the demand is at that intersection. Because I think if you don't have a decent intersection design there, it's kind of fruitless to do the parkway construction. Beyond that, I guess unless the General Assembly gets the transportation issues settled in Richmond, we may not have any money to do it anyway. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay. David?
First of all, I want to thank you, Bob, and thank the groups DFA and Earth Week for organizing this event and hosting us tonight. I have long been a opponent of the Meadow Creek Parkway for many reasons, one of which is that I believe that when you're going to spend over $100 million of the taxpayers' money, it should be a slam dunk. There really shouldn't be questions about whether this project is going to accomplish what it sets out to accomplish. And it seems to me that there are some pretty serious questions about whether it's actually going to decrease or increase traffic flow through our residential neighborhoods. And my concern with the parkway goes well beyond that. But I've always thought that if we're going to build new roads, it's much better to build roads to steer traffic away from our residential neighborhoods and away from the heart of the city. And build some of those connector roads, the Eastern Connector, Southern Connector, the Fontaine Connector, et cetera, and do that first, and hopefully that will alleviate some of the traffic concerns that have been expressed. Now, so I would not have voted to move forward with the parkway. Now, having said all that, the fact that there was a 5-0 vote on the parkway indicates that council is moving forward on the parkway, and if that continues to be the case, I see my role as making sure that it's as good a road as we can get it and has, increases pedestrian and bicycle access to the park, has restricted access, and for vehicles, and does not end up becoming, in essence, a four-lane throughway through the heart of our city.
Okay. That pretty much covers the second question as well. David, what is your opinion of a proposed vehicular crossing of the downtown mall on this east end?
Well, again, I am not in favor of bringing more automobiles onto the pedestrian mall. And I understand the concerns that have been raised by the business community downtown. But I really do honestly believe, and I think the data shows, that once the new construction on the east end of the mall is completed, I think that construction activity has had a pretty severe impact on economic activity on this end of the mall. And once that construction is completed, I think the main argument justifying spending, again, a pretty huge sum of taxpayer money on this project will have been mitigated. So I believe in maintaining the integrity of the downtown mall, and particularly I've talked to a whole lot of both mall users who appreciate the pedestrian nature of the mall, but also young parents whose children frequent the mall, with their young children, and the recommended site for this crossing is within a block of the Discovery Museum, and I know from personal experience there are a lot of kids running around in that block, and I just don't feel like it's the right project at the right time, and I would have voted to uphold the Planning Commission's 5-2 vote against it.
Julian?
I guess I really haven't made up my mind entirely on that issue. And if I'm elected, I guess what I'll do is wait until the results are in. I guess one thing I'd be interested in seeing is what the sales tax revenue is down there, if it's really had an impact or not, because that seems to be one of the arguments of the businesses down there. However, going back, I think back in the 70s when we were doing the mall, we had some of those same sorts of things, and that changed once, as Dave pointed out, the construction ended. I guess the two concerns that I have about it, as he pointed out, is its close proximity to the Discovery Museum, and the fact that I don't want to say anything to really diminish the mall. And the other thing, frankly, I would not support spending $800,000 to $900,000 on that intersection. So when I think of all the other things that we need in the city, so once the results in, I would be willing to make a decision, and I would base it on what the facts are at that time.
Hey, Julian, transportation and transit initiatives are very important in regard to development. What initiatives do you believe are consistent with sustainable development, and which of those do you think the city could do a better job of pursuing?
Well, the first part of the question, the other day Dave and I put out a position on some of those issues. One of the things I think we talked about was we'd like to see the Charlottesville Transit System be expanded to subdivisions in the city, with the thought maybe we'll get more ridership, get people to come into the city, also try to do some park and ride things with some of the shopping centers where people could park, with the thought being when people return at the end of the day they might do shopping. I think one of the things the city needs to do a better job of, or really two things, is increase the frequency, if we can figure out how to do that efficiently. And some of that obviously depends on getting the ridership up. Of course, gasoline prices may be a catalyst to make some of that happen now, which maybe that would be good. Beyond that, I'm just trying to think. The other thing I think, and we've talked about too, is a lot of people have told us that they'd like to have Sunday service, and I think that would probably be helpful also. And we've heard that from a lot of people talking to people in the community.
Is there a follow-up?
I agree with everything Mr. Talaferro just said, and I would add we also, one of the other items in that that position paper that we issued the other day had to do with greater regional cooperation in transit and up to and including creating a regional transit authority to try to create a more efficient and effective and more user-friendly transit system to serve the whole region. So if you can encourage greater cooperation between CTS and UTS and JAUNT and other transit providers. And just a couple other things. I think when you're talking about promoting transit and alternative transportation, you have to be willing to put some money up and really invest in it financially. And so I would, I have and I will continue to advocate for increasing the diversion of funds from road building to alternative forms of transportation. And also, I learned recently that the city of Charlottesville is actually further behind than VDOT even when it comes to integrating bicycle and pedestrian planning with road planning. And so I'd like to see us, if nothing else, at least come up to par with VDOT, ironically, and and do a better job of promoting bike and pedestrian access in our cities.
In your opinion, what are the city's obligations to county development in regards to creating traffic infrastructure, and how far should the city go to accommodate it?
I think the city's obligations aren't to the county. The city's obligations are to protect our residential neighborhoods and protect those homeowners and renters whose lives are being fairly severely impacted by the growth in the county. And so, for instance, with the Biscuit Run development, which is slated to bring upwards of 5,000 new homes on the south, just over the southern line of the city, that's going to have some pretty severe impacts on the Fry Spring neighborhood and my neighborhood as well in Belmont. And so the city has to be a very active player with the county in the planning process to encourage and do everything it can to require the county to accommodate the traffic demands that project and other projects like that are going to bring, so that we don't overwhelm our residential neighborhoods with new traffic. And that includes going back to another one of the provisions in our statement the other day, which is, as Julian said, you know, any project like that has to include transit access. So there has to be a bus line going through these new developments to make sure that we're increasing ridership and decreasing car usage whenever we see new developments happening. So.
Do you have any follow-up on that?
Well, I certainly agree with what Dave says. I think we need to take care of the city residents first. You know, frankly, I think the city has stepped up to the plate in a lot of areas, and I think, like, agreeing to do the parkway. However, I don't really think the county has upheld their end of the bargain. We can't seem to get a bypass. We can't seem to get connector roads that will steer traffic around the city rather than directly through the city. And I think, as we said the other night, you know, that you have to try to negotiate with the county, but the point may come where we may have to play hardball to be able to get something done. And I'm not certainly not afraid to do that, because I really feel strongly about protecting the neighborhoods, because I've seen things change a lot in the city over the last 40 years.
This is for you, Julian. Okay. Automobile exhaust is a major source of air pollution. Do you believe the city has a responsibility to promote transportation projects that target reduction of traffic and thus those emissions in the city? And if so, what sort of initiatives would you appeal to reduce sources of air pollution related to traffic?
Well, I think they do have an obligation to do that. I know some things have been done. I know even we had a serious issue in our fire stations with exhaust that had cancer-causing agents. And a number of years ago, we went ahead in conjunction with the Firefighters Association. We worked to get the funding to put in a system to take that out of the stations. I know another thing they're doing in the fire department now, they've even cut back on number, particularly on automatic alarms, cut back on the response. Of course, that was primarily to reduce fuel consumption, but also that reduces the pollution. And I think another, I don't know what the city's looking at, is maybe going to the biofuels, such as Harrisonburg, Virginia has done. From what I understand, it's really not that much more cost to do it, and it certainly would reduce pollution. And I would certainly hope that the city would pursue that.
I agree. And I, you know, a gentleman named Jonathan Blank here in our city has been promoting the idea of the city converting some of its buses to biofuels and setting a goal of at least 10% of our own city's usage be converted to biofuels within a year, which I think is a reasonable goal. And we just need to make it a priority for the city to be a good model for the private sector in using less environmentally destructive energy sources, and also to promote more sustainable design and energy efficient design in city projects. So I think the other thing that the city can do in terms of reducing vehicle usage and reducing exhaust is to promote more infill development where that is pedestrian oriented and transit oriented, rather than the continuing suburban sprawl that we see eating up our countryside and forcing people to rely on their single occupancy vehicles. So.
Our next topic is parks and green space, and it comes right back to the infill development. How would you work with or regulate planning and development interests to encourage better integration of nature with our urban environment, particularly in regard to infill development?
That's a good question. Just the other night, I think it was Friday night, Julie and I went to the opening for a new development in town called River Bluff over in the Woolen Mills neighborhood. And while nobody wants to see, you know, forests taken down and, you know, green spaces encroached upon, again, if we're going to develop, I'd rather see us develop in the city rather than develop sort of sprawl out into our rural areas. And the one thing that I really liked about that development in particular is the fact that it maintains a great deal of the green space, and it also incorporates a lot of environmentally friendly design principles in the construction of the development itself. And I think that's being a good model for other developers to show that building in the city does not necessarily mean clear-cutting and does not necessarily mean paving over every last inch of green space, but that you can develop in harmony with the environment. The other thing is, in terms of development doesn't also mean building on every single square inch of the city. It also means finding those opportunities, such as our commercial corridors right now, where there are tremendous opportunities for infill development, housing development, commercial development along some of the commercial corridors. And again, that by definition is pedestrian friendly and transit friendly and creates opportunities for people to live where they work, and that's a model we should be pursuing.
Julian, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I would certainly agree with what Dave says. I would not be opposed to particularly green building designs to maybe offer some sort of tax credits for developers that will take those sorts of projects on, because I think infill development is kind of going to be the wave of the future. I also think with infill development, and I know they're doing some things, I think, with some ordinances, but in order to preserve green space, I wouldn't be opposed to do that by having ordinances or regulations that would specify so much square feet, et cetera, based on what you're building, to ensure that we maintain sufficient green space within these areas where they're doing infill development.
Julian, in the 2005 survey done by Parks regarding its services, it indicates that most Charlottesville residents would like to see an increase in walking, running, and biking trails and natural resources in the parks. How would you plan to meet that demand within the current park structure, and which parks would you target for redesign along these lines, and why those parks?
Well, I think probably the first one that I would try to start with would be McIntyre Park, because it's a very large facility, and it's going, if the parkway goes through, there will be some changes made in there anyway, and that would probably be a good time to do that. And then I think you could move on to some other parks, such as maybe Penn Park, Azalea Park, and some of those areas where you have a bigger footprint to work with. And I would certainly support linking more areas of the city by bike paths and walking paths, and I think we're doing a pretty good job in some of those areas, but we could certainly improve.
I think the parks study that they recently did, looking at needed improvements in the park, it spelled out some pretty serious needs at all the parks. And I'd want to take a closer look at that study, and I'm not sure if we have the financial wherewithal to do every single repair that they recommended that we do. I mean, I think the final price tag was about $33 some odd million. But within that, we need to sit down as a council and prioritize. And I'm just not ready yet to say which one should go first until I take a closer look at that. But in terms of enhancing the parks and enhancing our trails, I think one of the first things we need to do is to, just a few years ago, our city invested a whole lot of money and a whole lot of time in creating a bicycling pedestrian plan for how to improve our trails, how to improve access for bicyclists and pedestrians. And I fear that that's one of the many plans that we commissioned that and end up sitting on a shelf somewhere gathering dust. And I will be a real advocate for taking another look at that plan and taking a look at the list of projects that they recommended and choosing one. And in talking with some of the folks that helped design that plan, one of the main ones that they talked about was building a connector trail from the Rivanna Trail to Dardentown and Penn Parks, which would improve the trail system, but also symbolically I think it would be good in linking up the parks and linking up some of our green areas. And also Garnet Mellon, who's a real advocate for our trail system and for our environment, has encouraged us, and I think rightly so, to think about acquiring more conservation easements along the trails and in other naturally sensitive areas of the city, which is certainly an initiative that I would support as well.
David, native plants in Virginia are losing the war against invasive species. Parks has recently cut down acres of invasive bamboo running rampant on city property. What measures do you think local government can take to encourage native plant propagation and natural habitats?
I think the initiative you just talked about was a good one. I will admit to not being an expert on this subject, but thankfully I know a lot of people who are experts on this subject. And so I think as we're looking at, again, going back to what we can do to enhance the parks and enhance and protect our natural areas, we have to put a real priority on that issue in particular. And beyond that, I just can't go into a lot of specifics because it's just one of those issues that I'm not real well versed in. So.
The only thing I could add to it, possibly might be able to partner with some of the garden clubs, and I think they have maybe a master gardeners program or something, and we might be able to get some advice, help, and participation from some of those folks in trying to preserve some of these things.
Okay, the next topic is water supply management. Julian, the city has recently paid some attention to the need for improved stormwater control methods, as witnessed by the critical slopes ordinance passed in January and the erosion and soil inspector position created in the fiscal year 2007 budget. What further measures would you like to see the city take in regards to stormwater management, and how can we improve on a good start?
Well, one of the things I think it kind of interests me is the rain barrel concept of trying to get people to start using rain barrels to preserve rainwater. As I was talking to someone the other day about that, they said, if we could just get a percentage of the households probably to have two barrels to catch water, what a difference it would make in runoff in the city. And I guess, beyond that is trying to plant, vegetation in areas where we have erosion, trying to prevent the erosion. And I guess that would be a couple of the things that I would really be thinking about.
The other day when we were touring River Bluff, we looked up on the roof of one of the buildings, and there was a sprinkler sitting up there. And it was like, why is there a sprinkler sitting on top of the roof of that building? And the reason is because it was a vegetative roof, a green roof, which is something that the Albemarle County office building now features on part of that building. And it's partly to get at this whole issue of runoff. And I think it's a really innovative approach that we should encourage more builders and developers to incorporate wherever possible. In addition to that, I agree in terms of the planting, the critical slopes, the steep slopes ordinance, all of these things we have to continue to prioritize to address that issue. So,
David, on April 18th, Ravana Water and Solid Waste Authority announced its intention to go ahead with the local pipeline and raising the reservoir dam. What do you think are the primary benefits and or detriments of this project? And given that state and federal agencies will require mitigation in connection with this project, what mitigation options do you prefer and why?
I think there's some tremendous benefits to this particular option as opposed to the main competing option, which was to build a pipeline from the James River. And I think the authority made a good decision in deciding not to go with the pipeline, and for a number of reasons. One is I don't think we could have guaranteed our residents that the water supply would have been as safe if we had pulled water from the James River. Also, I was very concerned, and I know many people were very concerned, about the potential for opening up new development along the route of the pipeline from the James in some areas of the county that are not designated as growth areas. And so I was very pleased to see the decision that the authority made regarding the water issue and keeping our water supply local and building up our local capacity storing water. And I think the other exciting benefit of it is the mitigation issues. And I know Councillor Lynch just recently spoke about some pretty positive results or potential results that could come in stream and protection of streams in this area, in the city, and in the county. He mentioned some specifically, and I think there's going to be a lot of funds available because of that to do some of the stream bed protection and stream protection measures that a lot of us have been wanting to see happen for years. So I'm definitely optimistic. So.
Julian?
I certainly support the decision that they made. I wasn't in favor of the pipeline. Frankly, I don't want to drink water out of the James River, but that's just where I am. And then the other issue is if you go down there when we have drought conditions, the river drops down so low, I just wonder if you ever get any water out of it anyway. But beyond that issue, the streams, I really don't know enough about what they're talking about, but I'm sure that I would probably support what mitigation efforts do the least environmental damage. And I really haven't read what is proposed. I've heard Kevin talk about it a little bit, but I think it's the best way to go. And I guess I've been concerned a long time about both the quantity and quality of water, because we need to have that in the community. And the other concern has been why it's taken so long to really address it. But beyond that, I think it was a good decision. I'm glad they made it.
Mm-hmm. Related to the supply question is also water conservation. The recent drought until the past few days brought that issue up again. What conservation measures do you support, and how do you think the city can improve its public outreach in regard to these conservation measures?
I think the city needs to continue to promote the low-flow toilets, low-flow shower heads, and I think one of the things they probably need to do is really increase their educational efforts as to what water is being used. I think one of the things they do now, they tell you on your water bill how many gallons of water, and you don't have to figure it out yourself, and which I wasn't very good at doing that. But I think that's helpful. But I guess that they really through the educational efforts, and they've done some of that, but it appears to me they only do it when we have a drought. And I think it probably needs to be a year-round effort to really make people aware of it, because we're going to have a drought again, there's no doubt about that.
I completely agree with everything Julian just said. And I think we need to take it up a notch. And I've called for the city to work with some of the sustainable design development brain trust that we have here in our community to develop and promote a set of green building and ecological design standards for our community, which would expand use of energy-efficient building technologies and appliances and heating and cooling systems, environmentally friendly building materials, renewable energy sources, and certainly water conservation measures. And so when you look at what the city can do working in partnership with the private sector, with the design community, we can really become a model community when it comes to building in a way that lessens our impact on the environment. And then the city, as it does its own construction projects, would incorporate these standards in its projects and then encourage the private sector through incentives and education programs to step up to the plate as well. So
this next question is following up on what you had just said. The city, by virtue of owning a great deal of public property along various creeks, rivers, and streams, is in a position to be in a proactive role model for water stewardship. You had mentioned green roofing and rain barrels. How about riparian buffer plantings, other conservation techniques, stream restoration projects? What initiatives do you think the city should continue or begin, and what resources should they devote to that?
Well, this is exactly where I think Kevin Lynch's points the other day, I think, bring us reason for hope in terms of doing the buffers and doing the plantings and doing the stream restorations. The water supply initiative will allow us to pursue some of these goals, so I'm very excited about that. I think the other thing is just over on Barracks Road recently, there's a new bank that's being built off of Barracks Road, and the developers of that particular property have made a point of bringing the creek, which is in an underground concrete tunnel, basically up to where it's in its natural state, and create a little bridge over the creek as a way of highlighting, you know, both the aesthetic and natural importance of our creeks and stream beds and riverways. And that's the kind of development that I'd like to see happen in all new developments. And the city should certainly be encouraging that wherever possible. So.
I wouldn't disagree with anything Dave said. I think it's important that the city set the standard. And I'll just add this as a comment. And we did the tour out in the Fry Springs neighborhood. And if you look at Johnson Village and you look at the development behind there, it's such a glaring difference where all the trees are taken. And then you look at Johnson Village when that was developed, they worked around the trees. And, you know, those are the sorts of things I think we really need to take a look at, because that is really a contrast when you look at it. I just mentioned that.
Our next topic is land use and development. Julian, we'll start with you. Do you believe it is in the city's best interest to attract, support, and use green design and eco-conscious businesses, and how would you propose doing that?
Well, I absolutely believe it's in the best interest of the city, and as I think I said earlier, I would certainly be supportive of maybe trying to work with the private sector, perhaps by offering some sort of tax credits, those sorts of things, because I think it all contributes to reducing pollution. And beyond that, it appears that it's pretty cost-effective to do those things, and the return on investment, I think, would probably be would make it, you know, feasible to do for a lot of businesses.
The interesting thing is, as many people know, the city already is home to some of the world's most visionary thinkers and doers when it comes to sustainable development and design. But the problem is, as I've said often on the campaign trail, is they're doing projects in China and Detroit, and they're doing projects in Germany. We've got to do a better job of tapping into that brain trust. And again, we really should be the model city when it comes to green development, green design. I think by, again, working with those designers and developers who are pursuing some of these sustainable technologies to develop a set of green building and ecological design standards, that's going to really help in that regard, to show that we are strongly in favor of development that lessens our impact on the environment.
David, when it comes to approving development and housing projects, how will you balance the city's need for revenues with the public's need for space and environmental health?
Again, I just go back to this idea of focusing development and residential development specifically in those areas of the city, for instance, our commercial corridors, where people can live and work in the same neighborhood and not have to drive from their home to their place of work, or they can hop on a bus to get to their place of work. When we are looking at developing in natural areas, again, we have to follow the example of some of these recent developments that are looking on how to maximize green space and not just do what Julian referred to and just go in and clear cut a whole strand of trees, whole stand of trees. And so I think, again, I'm in favor of infill development in the city as opposed to suburban sprawl development, but it has to be done in a way that honors our natural environment. So.
I'm in the same place Dave is on that. I think it's important to encourage the development along the commercial corridors. I'm kind of a fan of bringing the streetcars back, in all honesty. I think it'd be nice to have a streetcar system if we could figure out how to pay for it. I think there's a plan out there. You know, the first leg would be to have a streetcar system from downtown. The university would be the hub. And then the secondary part of that project might be to go from the university area out to Barracks Road, which I think that would be great for the environment, be great for residents, because that area, the West Main Corridor, I think is really going to boom in the next 10 years. You're going to have a lot of growth up there. And I think that would be a great way to address that. People be able to go to Barracks Road to shop and get to grocery stores and all those sorts of things, which is important. And so that's where I am on that.
Okay, Julian. The infill development is definitely a key phrase in the election process. How will you ensure that that development style will both preserve open space for city residents but also provide affordable housing?
Well, I think there's a couple things we probably need to do. One thing I think we have to encourage developers to set aside more affordable housing by whatever means we can do that. And I think there's some ways to do that. I think the other thing we need to look at is what some other cities are doing around the country, because there are some successes out there. I don't think it's probably necessary to reinvent the wheel, but I just think we have to try to model on those. Beyond that, I think once again, as far as the open space, we may have to, that may have to really be done by some sort of ordinance or a regulation.
It's a good question, and affordable housing, I think, is the most pressing issue facing our community today because it affects so many people in our community. And so I've been talking a lot about affordable housing on the campaign trail. I don't believe the argument that a smart growth and affordable housing cannot go hand in hand. And I really do believe that if you're proactive in the way that you promote affordable housing, it can go hand in hand and should go hand in hand with smart growth measures. So, for instance, one of the things that we can do, following on Julian's point about looking at what other communities can do, is over 350 communities across the country have created dedicated funds for affordable housing development. And I'm proposing, and my first act as a city councilor will be to push for the creation of an affordable housing investment fund for the city of Charlottesville, through which a small percentage of existing revenues are set aside into a fund that can then be used to leverage state and federal sources of financing for new housing development that targets the housing needs of our low and moderate income citizens, many of whom now are having to move 30 and 40 and 50 miles away to find housing they can afford, which causes a direct impact on the environment because they're all having to rely on the automobile to get to work, and it's creating more sprawl and more congestion, and we can do it a better way.
The next topic is energy and some other odds and ends. David, every year trash becomes a bright line item in the annual city budget. For example, the Ivy landfill cleanup, revenues from trash stickers, recycling initiatives. and large item pickup are just a few of the trash-related budget issues from the last couple of years. How do you think we can improve our waste services, and what would you do to promote recycling efforts?
Well, I think we've made a good start in our city in terms of recycling. I'd like to see if there's ways that we can expand the the roadside recycling to include other kinds of materials, so make it even easier for people to make that choice. I had a very animated conversation recently with a gentleman about our trash system, who really feels like we have dropped the ball as a region in terms of managing our own trash. And he feels that by closing our landfill, not that that specific landfill shouldn't have been closed, but by not having a landfill anymore, we've in essence pushed our problems onto some other community down the road that's taking all of our garbage, and it's also a very expensive option. But it's sort of relieving us of the responsibility of doing a better job of reducing our trash output. We have to be more responsible, and that means as individuals and as municipalities.
Julian? I'd agree that we've done a pretty good job with the recycling, and I think initially I wasn't very happy with the trash sticker system, but I think it probably has promoted recycling. And I think, once again, it's an issue of trying to educate people and trying to encourage people to, increase their recycling efforts. And some people do and some don't. I see in my neighborhood some people that just dump it all in the trash can and put the sticker on. But, of course, as the price continues to go up for trash removal, once again, that may have some effect on that.
Julian, should Charlottesville look into diversifying its energy sources? For example, buying or investing in wind power or purchasing green utility services?
I would certainly be in favor of, looking into that, and I would even be in favor of supporting some pilot programs doing that, because I think it's important to look at and try new things, and I think the only way you really know how those things are going to work is to try some of those different things and see what happens. And we've done that with some successes in the city, and we've had some failures. But I think you have to do those sorts of things, and I don't think that if people are innovative, you shouldn't penalize them when they fail.
Well, again, this goes back to my earlier point about, I know one company, at least one company, and maybe there's more, that's located here in Charlottesville. A good friend of mine works for them, who does, they do wind energy projects all over the country. He spends a good amount of his time in Colorado and Pennsylvania and other parts of the country. And I'd like to see us, again, tap into some of this brain trust we have here to figure out. Now, the conditions in Virginia aren't nearly as good as they are in the open plains of Colorado for wind power. But certainly I'd like to see how we can move forward in that regard, and if that means, micro wind energy stations, whatever it takes. I think, again, the city should be a good model when it comes to incorporating alternative and renewable energy. So.
David, both Charlottesville and Albemarle have purchased hybrid vehicles for their service fleets. Given that hybrids tend to be more expensive vehicles, do you support this as a good use of public funds? And how would you further such green fuel initiatives in terms of the city's use of oil and gas for heating, vehicles, maintenance, et cetera?
I disagree with the statement that hybrids are more expensive. I think hybrids might be more expensive up front, but in the life cycle, in the long term, hybrids save you money, and that's the real benefit of a hybrid vehicle. And not just with vehicles, but just energy efficient appliances, for instance. Again, there might be a higher upfront cost, but your savings down the line are really quite tremendous. I'm certainly in favor of incorporating hybrid vehicles wherever we can. I know the city experimented a number of years back with electric buses, which did not prove to be a very successful experiment because they couldn't get up and down the hills, or up the hills, I should say. They were fine getting down the hills, but you got to do both. And And so, but I think, you know, I think sometimes experimentation is a good thing, and I think we've got to be innovative. I'm blanking on the second part of your question, but
aside from transportation, other green fuel initiatives.
Oh, right, right. And so I mentioned earlier the proposal that Mr. Blank and others have floated regarding incorporating biofuels into this, you know, with the city's bus fleet, and I would certainly support that as well. So.
I wouldn't disagree with any of that, and as I just said earlier, I think we need to try different things so we can see what the outcome is. And I was just sitting here thinking about the green roof. And I know we're doing a major project now at Central Fire Headquarters, putting a new roof on, and that'd be a great place to put a roof like that. But they probably haven't planned to do that. But that would have been a good place to try that. But in any event, I support doing all these things because, as I said earlier, I think you've got to be innovative if you're going to stay on the cutting edge.
Okay. At this time, if we've got some 3x5 cards, then we can continue with our questions. Okay. Some quick organization here. We start with you, Julian. When was the last time you rode a city bus or took a bike? Right? Used a bike for transportation.
Well, I'm gonna be honest. I won't say I've never rode a city bus. I have rode a city bus a couple times, but it's been a long time ago. I probably haven't rode a bike for a year, to be very honest.
David.
Well, Nick. I ride the city buses somewhat regularly. Just my kids like to ride the city buses, so if there's a route that we're going on that where we can hop on the bus, we'll do that. I used to ride the city bus every day for a number of years to and from work, but frankly, that particular route was not very reliable, and I hear this concern a lot by people who do rely on the buses. And then if the bus doesn't show up or if you miss your bus, you got to wait an hour for the next one to come. And so I ended up having to make the choice to use vehicular transportation, which was which was unfortunate because I believe in the public transportation system, and I really feel like we have some real opportunities for improvement there when it comes to our buses. I used to ride my bike a lot more than I do now, and it's one of my goals. I was hit by a van years ago riding my bike, and been road shy ever since, but I do hope to get back on the bike soon. So.
Can I add something?
Sure.
I won't try to get off the hook, but I don't have bus service in my neighborhood.
But that would be something that you'd want to see expanded.
Well, I think if you're going to make it successful, you got to, and one of the things I know that I've heard, and I'm pretty sure Dave has heard, is that people say they're waiting for the city bus, and they see the university system go by two or three times, and the city bus still hadn't showed up. And, of course, that's one of the things that I'm hearing. People say, why can't they just consolidate everything? Anybody can ride whatever, which is, that's probably the only way you're going to make it successful. You got to get the frequency up. And you got to cover the neighborhoods. And you got to have bus service 7 days a week.
The next question is kind of on the same subject. It's how would you improve our public transit, and what do you see as the highest priorities for transit? It sounds like you're working toward a more integrated transportation system with the county, the university, and the city cooperating together. Are there other ideas that you have that could improve public transit and make it more of an option for people rather than filling the gas tank at each huge price?
I would just repeat what Julian has said about the Sunday bus service is essential. The frequency is essential. I want to take a close look at a proposal that Councilor Lynch has been floating for a couple years to try to restructure the bus routes in the city and encourage greater frequency and greater usage. One of the issues that Julian touched on in terms of park and ride, we have a lot of people that work downtown, work on the mall, that do the two-hour shuffle, they call it. You know, they'll park in their little two-hour parking spot, and then they'll go out and try to find another two-hour parking spot, and then this continues throughout the course of the day. And sometimes they'll go out in pairs and they'll just trade parking spots, you know, which is very creative. But and I've heard some suggestions by Harry Landers and others about, you know, can we find a way to create parking for downtown employees where they can park in an outlying lot and then have transit provided to them from that lot to the mall, which would solve a number of problems at once. One is it would relieve congestion in terms of the parking downtown and free up more parking spaces for the people that come downtown to shop or to utilize the services downtown. And it would frankly make our employees a little more productive, so they don't have to spend, you know, a considerable amount of time each day doing their little shuffle. So.
The next two questions are also on transportation. So these are items that you've pretty well covered. You had mentioned, Julian, the railway streetcar system on West Main Street, and this person is asking what would your opinions be of such a system in terms of its ability to help transportation problems, but also as a community building tool.
Well, as I said, I'm kind of a fan of that. I think it would, as the corridor on West Main grows, I think it would be ridership there. I think you can kind of look at this free trolley system that they're doing a trial on now. I guess they're still doing a trial on it, and I think that's been pretty successful in moving students from up in the university area downtown on the mall, which is helping to bring business downtown. And I really don't know what the community building. I need a little better definition of that.
I can only offer a suggestion that but when you're linking the university and the downtown
okay.
mall and the city services and the university
right.
Population,
okay.
that's what they'd be referring to.
Okay.
Okay.
I'd agree with that.
David?
I guess I would go back to my comment about the Meadow Creek Parkway, which is, again, as I understand it, the streetcar proposal is a rather costly proposal, and I'm not here to say I'm against it, but I just want to make sure it's going to deliver on its promise. And if there's a better way of providing transit from the university to downtown that does reinforce that sense of community that may not cost as much as the streetcar, I'm going to look closely at that. I'm not opposed to the streetcar at this point. I just want to make sure it's going to be a good investment for our taxpayer dollars. So.
Okay. David, what does sustainability mean to you?
It's a good question. I talk a lot about on the campaign trail about sustainability. And I think so often when we talk about sustainability, we think that it has to do with strictly to do with protecting the environment. And certainly that's a big part of it. And anything that we can do as a community to lessen our impact on the environment, I think we should explore. But sustainability also includes quality of life. A sustainable community is one in which people have access to good jobs. A sustainable community is one in which we have a thriving small business sector. People have access to entrepreneurship opportunities. A sustainable community is one that values health. And when I say health, I mean health on the individual level in terms of having access to high-quality health care, but also health on the community level and on the global level. So in terms, for instance, the city endorsing the mayor's U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement. I think sustainability is a very wide-ranging subject, and 10 years ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, our region spent a whole lot of time and energy coming up with what we call the Sustainability Accords, which is a set of principles about how we want to grow as a region. And I fear, again, that it's one of these projects that we really haven't paid enough attention to, I certainly will be an advocate for reviving that sort of thinking. And as we're looking at decisions, key decisions for how the city moves forward, we have to ask ourselves, are these decisions in accord with the accords? You know, are these decisions really going to improve the health and vitality of our community and, in the process, reduce our impact on the environment?
Julian?
Well, I think it's the quality of life in the community. I think beyond that, I think it's to say that we talk about Charlottesville being a world-class city, and I think we want to make it a world-class city for all our residents. And all the issues that Dave just mentioned, such as jobs, et cetera, I think all contribute to that.
The next question is more of a political nature, but coming from an environmental perspective. The question is, are there any environmental groups that have made endorsements for city council, and if you knew of any of those?
I know of one, and I didn't get their endorsement.
I think the only group so far was the Sierra Club, and they did endorse my candidacy. I don't know of any other groups that have done endorsements. So.
And David, this last question is also of a political nature. If audience members like what you have to say, how can they help make sure that you get elected?
Oh, what a great question.
Was that planted?
I won't comment on the fact that my campaign manager is sitting in the audience here. If people like what we have to say, we have an election coming up in 6 days. And I would hope that people will come out and vote on May 2nd, and you will tell your friends and neighbors and coworkers and colleagues to come out and vote as well. We have a really, I think, sad situation in our community in that if we get 25% of our registered voters to come out for a city council election, that's considered a high turnout. And so turnout is really essential. And in addition to voting, there are certainly things that people can do if they like what they've heard us say tonight over the next 6 days to help us get out the vote. We're certainly accepting volunteers to help do phone banking, to do canvassing, to help staff the polls. Anybody can go to our website, which is yestocharlottesville.org, and find out about volunteer opportunities, or they can call our campaign office, which is, I don't have the number, it's on the website, yestocharlottesville.org. Thank you.
Julian, do you have anything to add on that subject?
I don't know what I would really add. We just want to have a lot of people out to vote, and that's very important to Dave and I. And I would just ask you to encourage your friends to vote on May 2nd, and hopefully you'll vote for Dave and I. And with that, I'll conclude.
I do have the number for the campaign headquarters. It's 296-1865. If anybody would like to come and volunteer, we'd certainly welcome your support. So.
Okay, now, if there are any other questions from the floor, Donna and Tatiana are both rising to come to the microphone.
For the rest of the meeting, we're going to allow you to come up and approach the microphone and ask a question directly to either of the candidates, and please be kind.
I have two.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And you should be very afraid.
I am. Be gentle with us.
Several ordinances that I personally know of have been proposed by citizens in the city over the last 5 years. Three primary examples that I actually helped to write were, one, the city should use native plants in landscaping projects. Two, creating a natural habitat variance on the zoning ordinances for lawn care so that homeowners could be encouraged in natural habitat creation. And three, composting variances so that we could deal with some of the trash issues and allow people who are into organic gardening to have composting in large backyards in the city. None of these made it to council. My question to you is, there seems to be an active citizenry involved in environmental activities. What would you do as councilors to encourage such ordinances and such activities?
Well, the first thing, I'm going to listen to you, I'll tell you that much. I may not always agree with you, but if it makes sense, and this appears to make sense, and it doesn't cause some major issue or a problem, and I don't know what this really would, because some of it I don't know a lot about, very honestly, but I want to do whatever I can to support the environment. I probably became a convert about 25 years ago when I saw a lot of things happening in this community and around the country. So,
I agree. I mean, I'd love to talk to you sometime about why none of those proposals made it up to here. I think, and I applaud you or others that were involved with promoting those kinds of ideas, because that's the kind of innovation that we need to see and the kind of citizen leadership that we need to see. But we also need leadership on council for some of these issues, and that's the kind of leadership you'll see us exert if we're elected. But that means you still have to be involved. All of you still have to be involved in feeding us ideas and in encouraging us to do the right thing when it comes to the environment. I will say, with the issue of lawn care, we dump so much chemicals in our lawns and so many pesticides to maintain these really artificial environments. And I fear for not just in an aesthetic sense, but in terms of our impact on the environment and on our rivers and streams and drinking supply, et cetera, the impact that our obsession with, and I know the realtors in the room are probably, with our obsession with these nicely manicured lawns, that I'm particularly interested in the proposal you talked about maybe allowing for some variances on natural landscaping. So.
My second question is going to be a rather radical notion, I think, to most people in Charlottesville. We have spent a great deal of time, money, and effort to create downtown Charlottesville as the destination. Considering all of the environmental and sustainability issues that we have talked about here tonight, if you could turn back the clock, or if you could start over now, would you maintain that model, or would you diversify into a more neighborhood-like model with more mixed-use development so that downtown is not the only destination and we are not driving all traffic to one point?
I think the rather visionary effort by this council about 27 years ago now to create the downtown mall was a real courageous move, and I certainly would have supported that initiative because the downtown mall really is, I think, one of the great things about our community. Now, having said that, I am in favor of mixed-use development, as I mentioned earlier, particularly along some of our commercial corridors where we can create live-work opportunities and create more activity so that people have things that they can do just walking out their own door. One specific thing in particular that I've been thinking a lot about recently has to do with our city market, which is one of the real treasures of our community. And unfortunately, as many of you may know, the city market is threatened right now because the land on which the city market, the parking lot on which it sits, is about to be sold for development. So the folks that vend at the city market and buy at the city market are having to scramble a little bit to figure out where that market can go. One of the solutions that I'd really like to see us explore, and I will push for exploration of this solution if I'm elected, would be a solution that Ithaca, New York has very successfully undertaken, where they created a permanent facility. It's not walled in, but it's a permanent overhang facility for their farmers market on their waterfront, away from downtown, interestingly. But it created it helped to encourage people to go down to the waterfront, and it created a real synergy with some of the struggling businesses on the waterfront and the parks on the waterfront. So it really helped to enliven their waterfront, and it's something that so many people utilize and enjoy. Our waterfront here, not many people know, or a lot of people don't know, that we have a river going through the heart of our city, and yet it's sort of been shunted aside over the years. And I'd love to see if there is a piece of land along the river where we could create a permanent home for our farmers market, for our city market, and create a permanent structure for it, and really help to encourage more people to get connected to our own waterfront.
I think to answer your question, before I answer it, I'll say that as fire chief, I had a lot of things that never made it up here either, so don't feel too bad. But that being said, I'm sure that knowing what we know today, that we'd have probably done some different things that have been more environmental friendly, I think. Well, I know we would have. It's kind of like the market. I'm really in favor of a permanent place, and I hadn't thought about down along the river, but that might be a good place to do that. But the Sega.
You'd probably get RCS involved in that.
Well,
have riverfront instead of riverback development.
Yeah, no. But I just think it'd be nice. I think, you know, as been pointed out, the market is a big asset to the city. It brings a lot of people together. It's kind of a community gathering down there on Saturday morning. But I just go back to your original question. I'm sure that we'd have done some things different, incorporating some of the things that we know today.
Does anyone else have any questions? I want to thank both these candidates. Being a candidate is very, very demanding, and it's a real sacrifice of your personal life, time, energy, thought, and that's just a precursor. If you're elected, you have even more to do. So that's something to look forward to. Donna, do you have some closing comments?
I do. I always put the challenge back to the audience with these things, because there are two men in front of us, and there's a third running. First is to vote, but voting... The name of our group is Democracy for America. Democracy cannot work, and we don't really have a democracy right now because of the people who are not involved in the process. And I think each of you should make a commitment, whether it is sustainability, whether it is water, whether it is taxes, whether it is how we pay for these things, how you want to get involved will be a personal decision, but I challenge you to get involved in one way or the other. And if we do elect these two people will be elected, and regardless of who's elected, hold their feet to the fire. If you ever watch city council meetings, I can't always come up, I work and I'm busy, about this many people are in the room. In a democracy, it should be people pounding down the door demanding sustainable development, demanding green roofs if that's what we want and if that's what's going to change, because it is not my generation who ruined it all. It's you. We're going to straighten it out, and I believe that we can if we hold their feet to the fire. Tatiana wants to have some closing remarks, but thank you all so much, and I think we should give them a hand.
I would like to thank Julie Talavera, Dave Norris, Rob Adams for running this forum tonight, this town hall discussion. I encourage, again, like Donna, everybody to get out and vote May 2nd and think about what type of a future you want when you do vote. This is not about the next 4 years. This is not about the next 8 years. This is about what changes we can make today with these votes that will last the next 25, 50, and 75 years. Keep that in mind with the punch in your ballot. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you all. Thank you for doing that.